That was Nat King Cole singing and playing at the piano, and he was singing, "This Will Make You Laugh." With me now in Fresh Air is actor Dorian Harewood, who will appear as Nat King Cole in an upcoming television film based on Cole's life, and that film will be expected out this fall. Dorian Harewood will also star in a television film which will be broadcast during the next week on Channel 29 in Philadelphia. It's The Jesse Owens Story, in which Dorian Harewood portrays black runner Jesse Owens, who won gold medals during the 1936 Olympics. These Olympics were held in Berlin, Germany, while Hitler was in power, and Owens' victory was seen as being in direct defiance of Hitler's beliefs in Aryan supremacy. Dorian Harewood has appeared in a number of television programs, including Strike Force and Trauma Center. In 1978, he played Simon Haley, one of the leading roles in Alex Haley's Roots. Recent film appearances include Against All Odds, Tank, and Looker. The Jesse Owens Story will air in two parts, and that'll be first part on Wednesday, July 11th at 8 p.m., and concluding on Friday, July 13th at 8 p.m. on Channel 29. And welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Dan.
I was about to say Jesse.
Thanks.
How did you train for the Jesse Owens role?
Well, fortunately for me, I was already in pretty good shape when I was offered the role. And also, even more importantly, I already had a background in track, so I ran the same events that Jesse did when I was in high school. A heck of a lot slower than Jesse, but I ran the same events. And what I used was that knowledge to prepare myself for this particular project. I had to refamiliarize myself with the muscles that were used for those events. So I undertook a rigorous training schedule, about 5-6 hours a day, working on the life cycle on the track, and doing some Nautilus training to make sure that I was ready for the show, because we shoot for 14 hours a day, and it's much different from just running on a track. So I had to prepare myself for that kind of schedule.
Different kind of stamina involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess there's a lot of newsreel footage of Jesse Owens in the Olympics, and then Jesse Owens once he returns to the United States, and a lot of coverage.
We used some of that, and I had to look at all the footage that was available on Jesse's performances, because we do some intercutting between myself and the actual 1936 Leni Riefenstahl film of the Berlin Olympics.
What did you learn about both the character and the history of the time when you were doing research for the role?
I learned a lot about Jesse that I didn't know. The general public, I would venture to say, also doesn't know about 90% of what's going to be on this miniseries. The 10% that everyone knows of are the four gold medals, the tremendous athletic accomplishments that Jesse made. But what was more important to me was the contributions he made to society, to humanity, and to most specifically the youth of America. Jesse Owens was dedicated to developing the youth of America towards athletic and academic excellence, and he spent his life and all of his money and all of his time and his spirit towards that end. Also, I did not know of all the adversities that Jesse faced during that time. A lot of people in modern-day America don't appreciate and are not aware of the problems facing a black American in 1930s America, even someone as large and larger than life as Jesse Owens.
What incidents were chosen out of Jesse Owens' life were chosen to be highlighted in the film to try to portray the racism that he encountered?
Well, basically, Harold Gast, who wrote the project and also wrote A Woman Called Golda, which was so very well done, spent over a year researching the project with Ruth Owens, the widow, the family, and associates, business people, business partners, et cetera, of Jesse's. And basically this miniseries covers everything during the period of Jesse's life from 16 years old to 68. And it touches on different aspects, the humiliating things that Jesse had to do after having won the gold medals and been exploited, after having been exploited as a propaganda tool for the United States, and coming back to the United States, finding no work, no endorsements as there are today. Many of the promises that were made to his agent were then reneged upon his return. So he was basically faced with trying to support a family with absolutely no money. So he had to do a lot of things. He had to race. A lot of people know about the horse racing. He would race horses before basketball games. He would do janitor work. He would do just about anything.
This is after he had been to Berlin.
Yes, this is after he had been become a national and international hero. Basically, his country deserted him. But Jesse was one of the staunchest patriots that ever lived. He never lost his faith in America, and he never stopped putting himself out as a goodwill ambassador for the United States, even though he was being basically oppressed by the same country that he loved.
Usually when somebody wins a number of gold medals in the Olympics, they come back and do product endorsements, I guess for, you know, like maybe for track shoes or whatever.
Right.
Was that available to Jesse Owens?
Absolutely not. It should have been available, but once again, this was 50 years ago, and that was a long time ago in America's history. None of the sponsors wanted a black American endorsing their products. They didn't care who it was. They were appreciative that Jesse did what he did at the Olympics, but they simply did not want a black, nor did they think the public wanted a black American selling their product. So Jesse had none of those things available to him. He literally taught himself public speaking. He taught himself five major speeches for different groups, and would speak for different fees just to support his family. And that's basically how he spent most of the rest of his life. It was in public speaking and public relations for different firms, as well as I said, developing different youth organizations. But he wasn't able to capitalize on his accomplishments in the same way as athletes of today.
Just joining me, I'm speaking with actor Dorian Harewood, who stars as Jesse Owens in The Jesse Owens Story. That's a television movie which will be broadcast next week on Channel 29. It's in two parts. The first part is Wednesday, and this concludes on Friday. It's Wednesday, July 11th, and Friday, July 13th, and both parts begin at 8 p.m. Dorian, let me ask you about what led up to Jesse Owens running in Berlin. That was while Hitler was in power in Germany. And it's actually, when you think about it, you don't even have to think too hard about it. It's surprising that a black person was allowed to compete, or at least that a black person was sent to Germany at that time, as were Jews.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the things one of the scenes in the miniseries involves two of America's top sprinters who were Jewish, and it tells how those two sprinters were eliminated from the were removed from the 4x100 meter relay team because basically Avery Brundage, who was the head of the Olympic Committee at the time, did not want to further hurt his relations with Adolf Hitler. Hitler was already upset about the black Americans winning, and he did not want to see any Jews win. And Brundage, who was supposed to be on our side, was obviously not. In fact, later on, he was connected with neo-Nazi groups, et cetera, et cetera. So at the last minute, he ordered these two Jewish runners removed from the team, citing the fact that the Germans had some kind of secret weapon, some secret runners that may beat these guys, which was ridiculous. Their fastest runner, the Germans' fastest runner, came in sixth in the 100 behind most of the guys on the team. So it was just a blatant slap in the face to Jewish Americans at that time. But there were a lot of problems. Obviously, Jesse Owens was one of the first black Americans to participate in track and field at Ohio State University. Not the first, but one of the first. In fact, we have to remember, Dan, that all of the things that Jesse Owens did happened at least 15 years before the well-noted breaking of the color line in professional sports by Jackie Robinson. In fact, Jesse Owens ran against Jackie Robinson's older brother, Mack Robinson. And Mack came in second and won the bronze medal in the silver medal in the Olympics in the 200 meter. So the climate was very, very bad and very hostile as far as allowing blacks to run. Fortunately, because Jesse was such an amazing runner, people wanted him. Ohio State wanted him. Ohio State exploited him. And the United States exploited him in the Olympics. But other than that, he still had to go into the back door. He still was not considered a first-class citizen. And it was very frustrating to him. It was a very hypocritical situation at the time.
Let me ask you about just the production of the miniseries and how some of the running scenes were shot. Did the running scenes need multiple takes? I mean, did you run your heart out and then somebody says, well, you know, the light wasn't quite right or anything like that?
That's what people don't understand. You understand because you know the filming process. I have to preface this by saying I'm not a world-class athlete. I'm an above-average athlete, just barely above average. but the demands on a sprinter during a filming of a miniseries such as this are monumental. I mean, you and I have seen just in the Olympic trials world-class athletes pull up with hamstring tears and pulls and injuries after one pass through the 100-yard dash or through the 200 or whatever. I had to run at least six 100-yard dashes during a filming day, at least four or five hurdle races. What is it, 180 hurdles or whatever it was. I had to broad jump. I had to high jump. I had to run the quarter, the 4x100 meter hurdle or 4x100 meter sprints, relays, those kinds of things. And the problem was, I had to continually keep my body revved up. So it was warm, so I wouldn't pull a muscle. And that was totally contrary to the filming process. I would warm up by running maybe a mile or so, breaking a sweat, stretching, getting ready. Then I've got a good sweat and I'm ready to go. And then I'd have to sit for an hour while they fix the light or while they set a hurdle or while they set the extras in the right place. And then when they were ready, they'd say, okay, Dorian, we're ready. Dorian has to get warmed up again. So I'm trying to warm up while they're saying, well, okay, take your time, Dorian, but everyone's waiting, and this is like $10,000 a minute, but that's okay, you know. So I had to rush. And finally, towards the end of the shoot, I did strain a hamstring because there was one of the few days, by the way, that was warm. I mean, during this entire shoot, I was out there running in the cold, but this particular day was warm. And I thought I was already warmed up, and I wasn't warmed up enough, and I strained my ligament. So I had to lay off a couple of days. But I'm very surprised that I didn't get a much more severe injury.
Were the other runners in the film, were they professional actors or professional athletes?
None were professional athletes. Some were actors. Some were collegiate athletes. And they had to be restrained.
Did they have to pace themselves so that you'd come out first?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think maybe there were about three in the entire shoot I may have been able to outrun. But most of them were college athletes, and they were on the track team for a reason because they were fast. But as it turns out, we had a terrific stunt coordinator in Alan Olney, who made sure that everything was staged just right. And I had no illusions or delusions of being a world-class athlete, so there was no problem with injuries on that end, trying to keep up with anyone who wanted to try to test me. I said, hey, I'm playing Jesse Owens. If you want to race Dorian Harewood, we can race over here, and you know, you can kill me there. But right now, I'm supposed to be ahead, okay? You know, that kind of thing. So it turned out very well. They were very, very cooperative, and they looked very professional.
Well, the Jesse Owens story, as I mentioned before, will be on next week, next Wednesday and Friday at 8 o'clock on Channel 29. Let me ask you about an earlier television project of yours, and I guess this is really probably one of the big breaks of your career. Tell me if I'm wrong, but was when you were in several of the episodes of Roots as Simon Haley.
Yes, I played Simon Haley, and I aged from 17 to 70 in that. I was in Roots the Next Generations, which was a 14-hour miniseries, and I was in 10 hours of the 14 hours. As a matter of fact, it was the largest role in the entire 26-hour Roots saga, Roots 102.
Were you surprised at the impact of the show? Did you see that coming? Or
Well, we had seen the impact of Roots 1. Most sequels usually don't rise to the same level as the original. In our case, fortunately, the critical acclaim rose higher than Roots number one. And the ratings rose almost to the same level. In fact, at that time, we became the second most watched show in the history of television, second only to Roots 1. So the entire Roots saga, the 26 hours of 1 and 2, is the most widely seen project in the history of television. I was most pleased with the critical response we got because it was not a capitalization on Roots number 1. It was simply a continuation of a quality project. But yes, I was, even with all I expected, it was still a big surprise. I mean, those are very frightening numbers when you think of it. I mean, that's the power of television is unbelievable. And wherever I go, be it Europe or here or whatever, people have seen it. I mean, and that the world itself has been made smaller by television.
Do you think they recognize you? I mean, what do you think the face recognition? What was your face recognition out of that? Because after all, you were in many of the episodes aged to be 70 years old. Mm. Did people recognize you after the show?
I think what happened is, in fact, definitely people recognized my face. I became what I would say, Dan, I became a household face after Roots, The Next Generation, but not a household name because I listened to my advisors instead of listening to my wife and my own gut instincts. My advisors advised me to stay away from the press and simply let them come to me, that everything would fall into place, which was ridiculous because show business is the business of making sure you're seen, you're shown, and I should have done that. But I did become a household face. After finding out that I was a household face but not a household name, and finding out and learning of the implications and the ramifications of that fact, I set out to become a household name.
Well, let me ask you about an upcoming project, which I guess I'm talking about the film based on the life of the television miniseries based on the life of Nat King Cole. You play Nat King Cole, right?
Yes, yes. It's going to be a production for ABC Television. And Arthur Heineman has written the script, which is now being polished, and we're about to go into production with it.
What points of Nat King Cole's life will be highlighted in the film?
The film, I haven't seen the final project, but when last I spoke to the production company about it, which was Jozak and Jerry Eisenberg, the plan was to take him from his career in Chicago, which was when he was around 19, 20 years old, through Los Angeles, which is really when his career took got hot with the King Cole Trio, et cetera, et cetera. But he started mainly in Chicago, so we'll take it through that whole period up until his death. And he was a very young man when he died. He was only 47 years old when he died.
Well, I know that you're a musician yourself, and I'm curious as to if you've analyzed or tried to how you've tried to become familiar for the purposes of playing Nat King Cole, his singing and piano styles.
Yes, I've been listening to all of his music, of which there is no end. But his style was so remarkably distinct in its smooth, velvety texture with that kind of texture. And many people didn't realize that he also was considered by his musicians, or by musicians in the business, to be one of the top jazz pianists in the music business. Nat Cole was reluctant to sing, and he was also a reluctant pioneer, and that's what will be shown in this particular project. He was a reluctant pioneer in that he was the first, once again, to do a lot of things. He was the first Black American to star in his own TV series, the first Black American to have his own variety special, first Black American to headline in Las Vegas, et cetera, et cetera. Many, many things. And he didn't look for that. He didn't want to be the first. But that's what history dictated to him. As far as his singing, he didn't want to sing.
Is that well known that he didn't, that he was reluctant to sing?
No, it isn't well known. It is by his close associates. But Nat was a piano player, and that's what he wanted to do. He was made to sing as a practical next step with the trio.
What period of his music do you think is most well known amongst? Well, I guess there's a generational difference here, but like his huge hit was the Christmas song,
right,
written by Mel Torme, mm-hmm. but and a popular song, certainly not a jazz tune. Mm-hmm. What do you think he's better known for, his popular work or his jazz work?
I think most definitely his popular work. In fact, this is another thing that's dealt with in the project, his always wanting to get back to his jazz work, to his piano playing and his jazz singing as well. But the pressure was on to do successful commercial material, which, by the way, he did exceedingly well. He loved doing it, but he also wanted to do what made him feel the best, which was more jazz-oriented things.
And when's that expected to be produced?
It'll be done probably around Christmas time, at the latest, early 85.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you, Dan.
I've been speaking with Dorian Harewood, and the film we've just been discussing is a film yet to be produced based on the life of Nat King Cole. This Wednesday and Friday on Channel 29, you can see Dorian Harewood in the title role of the Jesse Owens story, the film based on the Olympic runner Jesse Owens. It's about 3 minutes to 5 o'clock, and you're listening to Fresh Air. In just a few minutes, we'll be joining National Public Radio for tonight's edition of All Things Considered. Right now, and in just a moment also, I'll tell you about what's coming up on Monday on Fresh Air, and the Sunday on the Best of Fresh Air. Here's tonight's Shadow Traffic.
Well, right now, for motorists traveling through the airport area southbound I-95, about a 15-minute delay from midspan of the Girard Point Bridge through the Platte Detour Road at Island. Also leaving Center City, Ray Street is slowing from 12th through 9th, and again from 5th through the I-95 on-ramp. Northbound I-95 itself slowing from Academy Road through the Grand Avenue construction, a 4-minute delay there. The eastbound Schuylkill Expressway heavy from the Twin Bridges through east of the Strawberry Mansion Bridge, a disabled vehicle off on the side there. The Walt Whitman Bridge in pretty good shape, but southbound 42 a little sluggish near 295. That's Shadow Traffic for WHYY 91 FM. This is Jim Battelese.
That Shadow Traffic report was funded through a grant from White Glove Car Wash. On Monday, Terry Gross will be back, and she'll be speaking at 3 o'clock with Terry Garrity, who, if you read The Sensuous Man and The Sensuous Woman by Jay, you'll find out on Monday that Terry Garrity is Jay. She's the real woman behind The Sensuous Woman and The Sensuous Man. That'll be at 3 o'clock. At 3:40, Julie Burstein, who will discuss an arts event in Philadelphia. And then at 4 o'clock,